which is to consider and take possible action to change the board's policy to include more than base pay and pension compensation for PEPA members. Is there a motion for discussion?
I'll move that we maintain pensionable compensation as base pay only, consistent with our existing policy.
Second.
So if I want to do a counter motion, because I was kind of anticipating somebody making that motion to keep it discussing, how do I go about doing that? Like, I want to, you know, be more than base pay.
Two options. One, we can discuss the motion that's before us.
All right.
Or second, a substitute motion can be made.
Okay, I'll make the substitute motion that we allow it to be included more than just what's defined as base pay.
Is there a second to the substitute?
I'll second it.
Second, Louie. So I guess we can discuss both motions. The first vote would be on the substitute motion ultimately. Is there a discussion on either of the motions? Comments?
We can hear from the public at all on that one?
We can certainly hear from the public with regards to this issue too. In the public
who's saying it's possible?
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Ken Westerman. I'm the past president of the Deputy Sheriff's Association. I'm also a board member of the Deputy Sheriff's Association, and I'm speaking on behalf and with the authority of the Deputy Sheriff's Association today. As you guys may know, I was the one that kind of brought this up in my memo last year regarding the pensionable compensation issue. There's been a lot of discussion over the last year as to which items should be and should be or shouldn't be included in pensionable compensation. We've seen from our competitors over at CalPERS, as well as the other 37 Act counties, that the overwhelming majority of systems are including items beyond base pay. The pension reform efforts, while we could agree to disagree on whether or not they were a good thing or a bad thing, they do specifically spell out which items should not be included, but it also leaves room for items which may be included at the discretion of the individual boards. That's very evident by the circular letter sent out by Governor Brown, which specifically speaks to what the reform was intended to do. In Contra Costa County, just to give you guys some background, in my agency, the Sheriff's Office, we're seeing an unparalleled number of people leaving. A lot of those people are leaving for better pay and better benefits. Contra Costa County simply cannot compete. They're not even close. To give you some example of numbers, in the last 18 months, no exaggeration, I've lost 55 deputies, at least, to other competing agencies, CalPERS agencies and other 37 acts. These aren't just, you know, seasoned deputies. These are brand new deputies. Many of them are PEPRA members, okay? PEPRA's been in place since January of 13. To give you an example of what that costs the taxpayers of Contra Costa County, it costs $144,000 for each person to hire them and train them to get their first 9 months. $144,000. That's going through their background process, psychological evaluation, the academy, paying their salary, and then getting them online, which takes about 3 months. $144,000 apiece. 55 deputies cost the county $7.9 million. Okay? That's a lot of money. Under PEPRA, pensionable compensation for PEPRA members, it's 50-50. They pay half the normal cost, unlike the Tier A, Tier C, and the other tiers that we all are familiar with, which is a much more expensive deal for the taxpayers. So I don't think it's unreasonable to try to at least compete with the other agencies that we're losing people to. I think anybody who could run a business or is trying to compete in some reasonable fashion would understand this concept. It's sad to see the people leave that have been leaving. We've all heard of stories in San Jose. San Jose Measure B, whether you agree with that or not, has caused a massive exodus of public safety employees. And that's happening here in Contra Costa County. Why it's not being reported or it's being underreported is a mystery to me. I'm sure some of you guys who know Sheriff's Administration, they'll tell you the same thing. You know, what we're asking for is fair consideration. We're not asking for, you know, extraordinary benefits. You know, normal, regular, reoccurring pay items. You know, your educational incentives, you know, your longevities, et cetera. Nothing that's extraordinary. It's fair to the future of county employees, and quite frankly, it's fair to the solvency of this of CSERA. And we need to have people to fund the system moving forward. And right now, they're just leaving. I mean, thank you for your time. If anybody has any questions of me, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
Any other public comment?
I'll make comments. And I met with two of the lobbyists that helped the legislators write the law. And what they told me was that the legislators always intended to have more than just base pay. If they wanted just base pay, they would have one sentence as base pay. But the reason that they put this can be included, this can be excluded, is because they expected to have other items. It was never intended to be spiking like longevity. You can't just all of a sudden do your last year or 3 years. So anyway, the way I see it, it was always meant to have things like longevity or education pay included.
John?
I think the restriction on making it base pay only, you're using the fact that public agencies have to operate under a rigid system. In the private sector, if you have a skill set or an education, when you go in for employment, you negotiate a salary, and both sides know what skill set you bring, and they come up with a price. They don't then say, and by the way, of that $81,352 is your base, I saw that you have a master's, so I added $2,352. It just doesn't work that way. So here we have a system where we have job classifications, and they try to make them as broad as possible. Anyone who's gone to an HR seminar knows they want as few as possible. That's what we hear from my agency's HR when we try to create new ones. They don't like them. So what's the solution? I've often heard, I think Deborah has said in the past, you can take care of it at the bargaining table. Well, this one you can't. This one is more problematic than that. Take the sheriff's deputies. So are you supposed to have a job classification that says deputy sheriff, and then a job classification that says deputy sheriff's 10 years of service, and then a job classification deputy 10 years of service and education incentive, and then deputy, you know, 10 years of service, education, and you work night shift? Well, do the multiplication, and now we have, you know, exponential job classifications. So how do we pay people for what they bring to the table? We use these ad pays, and that is still their rate of pay. When you go to if you hire an accountant at $80,000 and say they get 5% if they're a CPA, they get $84,000 a year. Let's say there was never any increases, and year after year, if you go and ask them, what do you make? They're going to say, I make $84,000, because that's what they bring. That's what their gross is every year. In fact, when they go to get a house loan, they're going to send this to your employer, and they're going to want to know what your pay is. There are four categories that the bank views as your earnings. I'll go from the bottom up. Bonus, commission, overtime. And I want to take a little break there. Those are three things that may not be regularly reoccurring events. They may be anomalies. So that's why they want those broken out. And what they call the remainder is base pay. So that's what we're arguing for here is if I take a month off and I get an education incentive and I take a month of vacation, you know, in a dream world.
yes, mine too.
Right. I'm still going to get that educational incentive, the licensing incentive. So it's the same thing here. And in fact, if you look at the federal law, FLSA looks at it the same way. They go, you can't just take one segment of your salary and say, this is what we're going to pay overtime on. No, they say, what are you being compensated for this whole week? And then divide that by 40 hours, and that's your pay for the week, not just your base pay. And so we have all these examples where in other instances, these methods of compensation are, it's your salary. To just put a name on it and say we're going to exclude it, I don't think it's fair. If it's regularly recurring, it's what you're going to get time and time again, that is your pay. And for that reason, I think it should be, just like it is part of your overtime, it should be pensionable compensation.
So, couple thoughts. Everything you said about salary just now, whether it be the various components, some might be unavailable in some employments, others are, like bonuses and so on, all those things, no one is suggesting, just to be clear to everybody in this room, no one is suggesting that we think employers ought to tinker with how they compensate employees in terms of shift differentials or whether they are or aren't going to be allowed certain allowances and so on. The question before the House is, what is pensionable? Because when you take that sheet and you go to the bank to get a loan, they're not loaning on your pension. They're loaning on your current salary. No one is suggesting that we would ever encourage or discourage an employer, as this pension board, from doing or not doing a certain thing in comping people. The question for us is, what is pensionable compensation? This is a defined benefit program. This is a guaranteed annuity stream under the Act. So it seems to me that those are very, very separable issues. All of the pay items that you described that I would encourage employers to offer employees, we don't have a problem with that. But the question is, under the Act, it's our discretion to determine what's pensionable. The second point I would make is, if there's any doubt about how we maybe got to this policy, just take a look at the look-back report, which discusses all of the issues with the final year tinkering with all of these various add-ons to employment that have made final average salary higher than it should have been for purposes of final comp. So there's a balance in there. To Ken, I would say, I think it's unfortunate that deputies would go shopping for a job based on where the best pension is, because that's what it sounds like to me. It comes across that way anyway. I do think there's a role for the employer to address that at the table. But
there is.
Other than that, I mean, it just seems to me we have a policy. We established it in 12. We reaffirmed it in 13 and 14. So the real question is there really a case here to vary from it? And I would suggest the answer is no.
John and then Jerry.
Compensation is made up of a series of components. The defined benefit plan, health plan, compensation. Ken in his comments indicated that we are losing deputies because of benefits and pay. And pay. Okay, Todd talked a lot about pay. If we increase the cost of benefits, we have to, by definition, decrease the pay. My 40 years of being in the compensation consulting business tells me overwhelmingly that what employees care most about is current pay. That is why people leave, particularly when they're young. It's maintaining their current standard of living. They are not leaving because their pension 30 years down the road might be somewhat less, even though very competitive with the world at large. Somewhat less. They're dealing with current pay. And if we reduce the ability of the employers to increase current pay by increasing other costs of the package, that's completely counterintuitive to my view of how we maintain and keep our current workforce and cause them to not want to leave.
Are you including public employees or just private in your definition?
I'm talking about all employees.
All.
Yeah, I asked when we had this brought up that we
have some examples of the impact of final average salary, including differentials. And what I was hoping to see is that we have three or four examples where somebody makes 15% of differentials. Maybe they make 5% for working graveyards, they make 5% for longevity, and maybe they have an education incentive, they get 5%. So they're making 15% above their salary. Their final average salary number is 15% higher than their base salary. That has to be multiplied times the years of service times the number for their tier. And I don't see any of those examples, because what frustrates me about this is, as we talk about it, most people think we're talking about final average salary. And when you look at final average salary with the differentials and it's jacked up 15%, well, that seems a little high. 20% seems really high. So does that mean that they're going to get 20% above their base pay when they retire? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. When you do the computations, if you have 15% around, and I'm doing a lot of assumptions on this. I've been through it with my own figures, so I know, but I'm doing a lot of assumptions that are in the ballpark. So if I have three differentials and it's 15% and that goes into my final average salary and then it's multiplied out, when I come out at the end, what I'm getting as a retiree is really basically about 70% of what I actually make. It's not 30% over what I make when I'm working. It's not 30% above my base pay, because the multipliers bring it down. That needs to be understood when we're talking about this issue, because we represent all these beneficiaries, both the actives. Well, currently this is, and I'm amazed that I'm really talking about this, because but that's part of being a trustee. I'm a retiree rep, but I have concerns for the actives that are currently working. If we do base pay only, we are really hurting their final average salary and what the figures are computated on. And I don't see that. So that bothers me that was not in here. So we have a perspective of what we're doing to beneficiaries when we go with base pay only. And it was an issue that I think needed to be covered. The other thing, you were talking about the look back pay in that study, and talking to Ken about his not being able to retain. People come to work where they want to come to work. So, in his benefit, and I'm going to say they have people who apply. They go through the cadet program. They're hired by this county. They work for a year, and suddenly they see that their salary is on the bottom end of what everybody else in the nine Bay Area counties get, and then they look at their retirement, and they see that their retirement is even less. So their idea then, after working for a year for this county or 2 years for this county, is, hey, if I go to San Mateo County and just do a lateral transfer, I'll be making 15% more pay, and I'll be getting 20% more when I retire. Good idea. I think I'll go to San Mateo County. So I think that's what he was addressing. He's not addressing, I mean, your words are true. I mean, you work where you want to be, so you want to come to, but if you get into that job and you see that you're a lower paid person, you're going to look, because you want what's best for your family. You want what's best for those people around you. And you'll make the move. And so we are losing people. When we talk about this differential program, I'm of the opinion that, and I guess you can already tell by how involved I am, or how excited I get about it, and how I talk, I'm of the opinion that we should do differentials. But I don't think we should do 99 differentials that CalPERS is doing. I do not think that that's right. I do think there are certain differentials. Employers need incentives to keep their employees in certain positions. Nobody wants to work graveyards. If you've worked graveyards for any period of time, you know how ugly that is. your whole family life is upset. The way you do things, it just turns it upside down. So what do you do to get employees to work graveyards? You offer them incentives. You offer them a pay differential of 5% or 7%. And they then go to work knowing that graveyard shift is going to interfere, but they're making more money doing it. And their thought is at the end of the career, that's going to add 7% hopefully to their final average salary, which may mean only 1% or 2% more in their pay when they get done, but they're going to do it. So you shake your head, Kurt, but I have not gotten any figures from you,
if
all right?
If you increase their pay, if you include a differential, a 5% differential in their pay, it's going to increase their benefit by 5%. It's as simple as that.
If you multiply it out times the years of service and the multiplier, it reduces that 5% by a lot.
No, their but that was on their old benefit without the 5%. Their benefit with and without the differential is different by 5%. The cost is 5%. The benefit's 5%.
You need to show me that in black and white. I don't believe you because I know what happened with my figures. When I came in with my, and granted it was a long time ago, when I came in with my differentials and I had three differentials and it jacked my base salary, okay? My base salary at the time I believe was like $4,500. I went out at $3,200 a year and I had those differentials.
You're comparing
$3,200 a month.
Comparing your pension to your base pay. But what you asked us to do was compare the pension with the differential to the pension without the differential.
I just told you. I gave you the base pay with the differentials. It jacked my salary. And then when we figured out, after the multipliers figured it out, I came out with $3,200. I came out at about 70% or so of my salary.
Yeah, I'm not comparing it to the salary. I'm comparing it to the pension. If you increase,
isn't that when my pension is my salary?
So, I mean,
but anyway,
what Kurt's trying to explain is if you, for the calculation, if you do your salary,
yes,
portion with and without differentials, that's apples to apples. But if you compare your salary with what your benefit turns out, your actual benefit turns out to be, that's apples to oranges. You've got to do benefit calculation based on your salary without the differentials and a benefit calculation based on your salary with the differentials and then compare those two amounts, not the salary with the differentials to your benefit with the differentials. That's a different, I mean, you're both saying the same thing.
It's a little differently.
Yeah. But it's a second step.
Well, again, I have a hard, that's why I asked for the written examples that so we can see that. So anyway, that's where I am. That's okay. I guess the motion has been made by Gabe, but I would suggest that if we go that way, if we do go with including differentials, that we as a committee set up a committee to see which differentials, because I don't believe we ought to include all the differentials that CalPERS is including. One final thing: when you did this part of the study, thank you for doing that. I mean, I guess what it shows to me is 17 of the 20 counties that are in Sackers are using some differential for their people. And so there's only, according to your article, there was only three counties that are not using differentials.
Four. That's right. I think there's a couple that only include
Stanislaus, Sacramento, and Sacera.
And then Moran and Ventura, it's just FLSA.
Right. I think that's correct.
Marin and Ventura include. It's only one, but they include.
Louis, then Deborah, then Gabe.
Raise your hand a little higher. You know, I agree with Jerry, what Jerry's saying, but also want to add that you need to look at incentive pays, what's permanent and reoccurring. When I started with the county, after 3 years, I got my basic post certificate by law, or my advance, that by law, I have to be a peace officer. I got to train every year. I got an incentive pay for that. It was permanent, reoccurring. I made contributions on that every year for 25 years. So it's not like it's the last year I'm bumping up my salary to say, hey, I'm going to go here, bump up my salary, and use it that I didn't pay into the system. People are paying into the system for their incentive pays. I mean, we got to look at that. I mean, the job description tells you that if it was permanent and reoccurring, it went towards your retirement, not just, oh, okay, you're permanent reoccurring, you put into the system, we have investigators that used to pay into the system. When you left investigations, that money stayed in the system. You didn't get that when you retired because it wasn't on your final average salary. Same with training officers. You were a patrol training officer for years. That went into your you find a job salary because when you left, most likely you were in patrol training people. We've got to look at what's permanent and reoccurring, not just, oh, okay, they get it for a year. And if we look at, and we should put in incentives like that, certificate pays. I mean, you got people that need certain certificates that train and go to school for these certificates. They need to have that incentive pay. I mean, it's permanent reoccurring. That's part of your salary. I just see that before Ventura, before everything that went on, 350 and stuff, these pays were already included. I mean, uniform is not included anymore, but back then uniform incentive was included in that. And we can maybe look back at what was included back then and go from there before Ventura and see what we put in before then.
Just to clarify, what's before the board today is simply whether or not the board at a future date will examine including items in addition to base pay. We're not making a decision on items today.
But I think that's what the board needs to look at. It's to look at it and not...
General policy vote today.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all, Lou. And Deborah?
So I couldn't really say anything more than what John and Scott have already said. I agree with both of their statements. My past position hasn't changed. That I believe this is an employer issue. Both on the pay side and the benefits side. But with respect to the conversation about the pay issue and losing county employees, if we were to start adding additional pay codes as pensionable, it would seem to me that the contribution rates would actually increase for the employees, which would actually reduce their pay even further. So while the long-term benefit then becomes greater, I'm not sure that, I mean, some probably would understand that, but I'm not sure how many people actually look at this so in depth that they would understand that now their paycheck just went down again and they still wouldn't be leaving the county and looking for a bigger paycheck. So I'm not sure how we resolve that. I still stand by that my previous statements haven't changed. This is an employer decision. It should be negotiated with the employers. I'm a little disappointed that our main employers haven't already taken steps to start to mitigate this issue since it's been around since early 2013. And I think that's one other issue that hasn't been mentioned. I think once we open up, if we were to make the decision to go ahead and say we will consider other pay codes as pensionable, then I believe we once again embark down a very long, lengthy process of listening to arguments on every single pay code. We have something like over 300 of them. And we, if this board decides that one pay code is out, one pay code is in, we end up opening ourselves up to further litigation over each individual pay code for each individual group lobbying for those pay codes.
Okay, what I can say is I think all we're supposed to do today is define the law. I interpret the law as saying that it should be more than base code. It's not for us to decide, you know, whether the money spent on salary or pension. That's for the employer to decide. If we say base pay only, we're tying their hands. We're saying we're telling you how to run your business. If we say we'll allow other than base, it's up to them to decide what they feel fits into that. and then we can go ahead and give the final say. So that's my take on it.
Brian?
Sorry. good morning. Mr. Westerman, thank you for speaking. So I've heard people say, I was here when this previous issue was initially, when it was initiated, base pay only, and the board did an extensive amount of research prior to this to research and investigate pay codes, and it was really up in the air on what the precedent would be. There was no precedent. CalPERS really hadn't decided. The law just came out. But to Gabe's point, the law does not say base pay only. So it leaves it up to each system to determine that. And a large majority of the systems have determined that pay codes differential should be included. And I've heard people say that it's up to the employer and we need to leave them the option, but that's completely counter to what we did. Base pay only does not give the employer any option. They now have to take any differential that they're incentivizing their employees to have, that they give to a certain number of employees to bring a specialty to this county. They have to now go to negotiation in the bargaining table and include that for all the employees. So how is that less expensive? I don't understand when you have to now include those differentials now with all the employees. When those certain individuals are bringing a special service to the county and giving their lives in terms of more risk or graveyards or more specialties to the county, why aren't we rewarding them as the pension is county pension is for the employee to continue their pay to protect them from, retiring? And I've heard also someone infer that by including the differentials, this isn't paid for. Well, it is paid for. It's paid for by the employee and also by the employer. And it's we are here to administer the system, and the employer should be able to determine what their employees should be paid, and we should be administering the system to the benefits of the pension system. This is undoing. By going just base pay only, the decision was made when I was here at that board meeting. It seemed like there was a lot of question around all the different pay codes, and the motion was made, it seemed, and I wasn't on the board again, to just go base pay only until the legal precedent had been set and people understand what CalPERS was going to do, to look to them. And again, if you look at 3 out of the 20 of our sister retirement systems throughout the county systems, they're all including differentials. But it just, I've heard somebody say maintain, that we're going to maintain base pay only. Well, this undid years and years of negotiations between the employees and the employers in the past. This is all in place prior to us doing this. And now they have to go back to the negotiating table. And it's been on the record, I believe Jared Plant, Local 1230, made mention at one of the previous meetings that they did try to go back to the negotiating table and include it, and the employer denied it. So I think that we should truly maintain what has been in place and also look at the norm throughout the industry and include base pay plus differentials towards the pension. So that's...
Again, what we're talking about here are what's considered pensionable for new employees as of January 1st, 2013, right? And nothing's been promised or negotiated, from what I can tell, that would be considered pensionable. It seems like the onus has fallen on us, the retirement board, to make that decision for what should be between the employer and employee to decide. It just seems to fall on our lap because of history. These items have been counted as pensionable before for the legacy employees, but we're turning the page here, a new chapter with new employees, and we know the reason behind this whole pepper in the first place, because we're about to bankrupt our pension. The public is very concerned how much it's cost them as taxpayers to support the pension program. They are supporting, in essence, with their taxpayers or tax dollars. I'm a little dismayed what Governor Brown said about the 99 that CalPERS came out with, insinuating that perhaps those were in line with the intent of the law. But when I look at the law and take it literally, word for word, it does speak specifically to normal monthly rate of pay or base pay, which I take as synonymous. I don't think they mean two different things, as the DSA letter suggests. I think they are one and the same. And then again, going back to CalPERS regulations, they make that distinction that these normal monthly rate of pay or base pay are separate from what's considered special compensation, which is what we're trying to throw into this, which I don't think belongs in the new law. I am very sympathetic with DSA situation and anybody else where they're struggling to maintain or retain their employees, especially after spending the amount of money to train them, bring them here to the county. But I don't think they should stick it to us and solve their problem. I think it goes back to the employer to figure out how they're going to support their departments to retain their employees. It's not our issue, per se. I'm concerned, but again, I don't think we should be making up for the employer's lack of concern by throwing these things into the mix. The law is specific. Normal monthly rate of pay or base pay, I take them as synonymous. I take them literal. And I think we've done enough as a board and as a staff to show we're on the right course, I personally believe. Unlike perhaps CalPERS and the other 17, 37 Act counties, I feel like we're on the right course doing what's the right thing as fiduciaries for the system, for our members, whether they're active or retired. And going down the path we've already been down once and know how it turns out is just foolish to do it twice. We've done it once. We know how it works out. I think we should just stay on this course and learn from history what's best for the system.
Candace? Yes, and being the newest member to this and representing one of the larger employers of this, I've appreciated the discussion today and all of the comments, and I appreciate the comments, discussions I've had previous to today, as well as people have met with me concerning this very topic. I understand why we're bringing it back, sort of the change in circumstances of some retirement systems now adding in beyond the basic base pay, and I have great concern about our deputy sheriffs and that we are losing people to other agencies. I get that. It's been a problem for the last couple of years, even pre-PEPRA. It was an issue, and I have got to agree with the comments today that it is the employer's problem. It is the Board of Supervisors, the sheriff's problem. We need to be sitting down. We've been working through some real basic things, such as coming up with a way, whether you call it an incentive or a penalty, for people who leave within the first 5 years, you know, having them pay back a portion of their academy training within the parameters of the law, providing potential, you know, looking at my discussions with the sheriff, you know, looking at bonuses to keep people here. When I look at this from the perspective of the retirees as my fiduciary duty to the retirement system, I'm concerned about changing the position that the board has previously taken. I think it's a slippery slope. We may go down as we start adding in items to base pay. And I feel that as the employer of most of these, I would rather see the money go in on the wage line to the people that we're trying to hire, the people we're trying to retain, rather than putting in the pension. And I've got to agree with you, most young people, most of the PEPRA employees we would be getting are not going to be looking as much at the retirement as the pay they're actually getting. And admittedly, at some point they're going to do that apples-to-apples comparison, but we need to have, whether it's the work environment in place, the salary, the whole package that retains people, and I agree, it's the employer's responsibility to do that. I also have a responsibility, from my mind anyway, I'm representing the Board of Supervisors, and it's been very clear over the last 2.5 years, almost 3 years that I've been on the board, and once PEPRA was passed, that we were counting as a board on PEPRA remaining base pay. And as we've made our budgets, as we've negotiated with our labor groups, we've counted on a certain pool of money, and PEPRA has freed up money. It very clearly, I say with FIRE, with the agreement we just reached with CONFIRE, the fact that we were able to recognize that incoming firefighters were going to have a lower benefit plan allowed us to open up more money to give them a bigger wage increase than we ever thought we would be able to do so. And ultimately, at the end of the day, my goal is to have a sustainable pension plan to ensure that we actually have the money needed to pay each of our employees as they retire. And by keeping it very clean, keeping it very clear as to base pay, I think it's the better way to go. So I'm going to be supporting the original motion, not the substitute motion.
Get back on it. I think, again, we just define the law. I think we're talking dollars and cents. Really, it's how does the law interpret? And this is for Rusty, the question. If they intended to be just base pay, then why did they say you can't include this?
Who said that?
That law that you're reading right
now. Where
does
it say that?
I don't have it in front of me, but I believe it says things can be included, things cannot be excluded.
In the AB
in that law you're looking at, yes.
No, it lists all the things that cannot be included. There's a long list of that. And
that's
then at
asking.
The very end, it gives the board discretion to include anything else. Numbers 11 and 12, especially 12, but both 11 and 12, is what we've been trying to exercise under, deciding whether or not to include, after a long analysis, these extra differentials. And in the last analysis, from what I recall, there are really very few that fell under this, and only because we were ignoring the requirement that CalPERS has even suggested that these items be available publicly in a pay schedule. There's an exception, of course, in CalPERS regulation, but we weren't including that at first. But even if we include what's available, public or not, there are very few items in that analysis that actually qualified. Longevity was one that comes to mind. And then a few that apply to either fire or safety, but very few of those.
I go back to that point. I think it would have just been said base pay only. That at the end of it, the fact that they are saying what can be. Again, I think we should be defining the law. I don't think we should be talking about what kind of it's going to cost or anything like that. We're here to interpret the law. The law to me says it's not just your base pay. Just your base pay, as I'll repeat, they wouldn't say to include this, exclude that.
Harvey, did you want to weigh in on
You're kidding?
You guys are doing
just fine. Only if you need me.
Gary? To what you asked, where is it? And it's in the memo on January 28th. It says on December 27th, 2012, CalPERS published
CalPERS,
a certain...
That's not a law, though.
I'm talking about the regulation.
We're speaking to the law, AB 340.
I didn't think you mentioned the law. He just said it.
No, I meant AB 340. Okay. It does say in there. What, right. Like I said, I talked to the people that helped write it, and that's what their intention was.
What? Lobbyists?
Well, they help. They're assistants to the legislators. And I don't think
that's
they lied
important.
To me.
No, I doubt they lied to.
Okay. This is an unenviable position to be in, but I won't shy from it. Because the issue is raised, what the law is. It's very important that we understand that this board, as trustees, we are an administrative body, not a legislative body. And there's a certain discipline that's important for us to follow. That discipline is that we're supposed to be following our plan document. We take great pride when we file with the IRS and we get that wonderful piece of paper that says that we're compliant with our plan document. So from a federal standpoint, from a state standpoint, it's very important that the board execute on the document that was given it. Policy issues, whether it's good for people, bad for people, those are things that are addressed in the legislature, not at this body. We're not a policy-making body when it comes to determining what the law says, and it, because that's our instruction manual. So let me try to make it clear what the law actually says, because, and I'm going to put up a slide. I have copies as well. The legislature was not writing, when the legislature wrote PEPRA, they were not writing on a blank slate. Law was already in effect for many years, as I'm going to try to demonstrate here. And it wouldn't be so clear. There would be room for this interpretation issue if the legislature hadn't chosen very specific language, language that already pre-existed, PEPRA.
So what was that language? Before PEPRA, the PERL, the Public Employees Retirement Law, said that, in the phrase that we're familiar with too, in the county system, comp-earnable, right? That was our phrase, that was PERS phrase. Comp-earnable means two buckets of things. What was called pay rate plus special compensation. So what was pensionable under the PERS law before PEPRA were two buckets of pay, of compensation. One was called pay rate, normal monthly, this is directly quoted, I left a few miscellaneous words out, nobody should worry about those say, because they're the same. Normal monthly rate of pay or base pay, similar situated members, services on a full-time basis during normal working hours, publicly available pay schedules, right? That was the first bucket that was pensionable. The second bucket was called special compensation, and it said, literally in the statute, this includes payment for special skills, knowledge, abilities, work assignments, and then it listed, and it's very granular, more than 99 pay codes. The law under PERS listed all of these things, incentive pays, longevity, premiums, all these things were in the second bucket. And all of that was pensionable. So when PEPRA came along, they were not writing on a blank slate. They didn't come up. They came up with a new phrase called pensionable compensation. Same thing as comp-earnable. What do you base the pension on?
Regardless of what legislatures after the fact say, or the governor after the fact says, or lobbyists after the fact say, we got words. What words did they write into the law that we're supposed to follow?
Only one bucket. Verbatim. Identical. Pensionable compensation means normal monthly rate of pay, similar situated members, services rendered on a full-time basis. Exactly. Verbatim, bucket one.
Didn't include bucket two. Had a whole list of things that says, notwithstanding anything else, you may not put these things in. But that was in the law before, too. I can show you the law before. It said, you may not put, you know, in PERS, you couldn't count vacation cash outs before. You couldn't count terminal pay like we used to. They had those exclusions, too. But they specifically said, going forward from January 1, 2013, pensionable compensation will mean only what this was before PEPRA and now after PEPRA. And they did not say bucket two was included. I can't look at that and figure out how bucket two gets included. I've heard no arguments in looking at the plain language of the law that was given us, our instruction manual, that says bucket two is implied in any of these words. It wasn't before. Why would we imply that now? Normal monthly rate of pay or base pay are not two different things. Some employers pay you on an hourly rate, a rate of pay, right? Some pay you dollars for a pay period, right? They're synonymous. But it doesn't require us to interpret anything because the legislature made it crystal clear that they were excluding bucket two, special compensation items, all those things that we're talking about now. So if you were a legislator, if I was a legislator, you would certainly want to entertain the DSA's competitive loss issues. There's no question about it. If you were writing the policy, if that was our job, we'd have hearings on that. We'd bring in, we'd do an impact report. We'd say, you know what? This is bad. This isn't fair. There are people who get regular recurring pieces of pay all the way through their career. They're going to pay contributions on it. This isn't fair. Maybe it isn't fair. I don't disagree with the fairness argument whatsoever. But there is a certain discipline, there's a certain integrity that this board needs to bring to the process of administering a policy that was written by a legislative body, and we are not a legislative body. And we haven't been delegated that responsibility. The legislature wrote it. This is our instruction manual. If there was ambiguity in it, we'd have to fill in the blanks. Lord knows, I asked Judge Flynn repeatedly to fill in some blanks for us, because we didn't get it from the legislature under AB 197 necessarily, the companion piece to PEPRA for legacy members. So we asked the court, fill in the blanks for us, because we are an administrative body charged with following our plan document. This is our plan document. We don't need a judge to interpret this. This couldn't be plainer. Now, if some legislators meant something else, if some lobbyists meant something else, if the governor thought he was getting a different bill, great. They didn't get it. This is the law they got. This is the law they wrote. This is what was signed into law. This is our instruction manual. Help me advise you any differently than reading this law. If somebody has a disciplined interpretation that can stand up, I'll listen to it. I'll advise you on it. I don't see it. This is the law that was written. It's our obligation to follow it.
Jerry? I would add, not supporting learned counsel, but AB 340 makes it very specific as to what is to be included. And then it goes, and there's been some reference to this, it gives in excruciating detail 10 items in here in case the people didn't get the message. They're saying these are the 10 items that we also specifically mean should not be included. Then there's been some reference by some of the speakers that 11 and 12 somehow gives us some wiggle room. Those are actually in exhibit attachment number 1. 11 and 12, I would argue, say that if we didn't cover enough items that shouldn't be included, 11 and 12 also gives you boards of directors the ability to exclude other items too. It makes it very clear that there, if we didn't cover it, here's other things that you can exclude as well, and that's things that you don't believe should be included. So rather than 11 and 12 being inclusive, giving this board, I think, direction somehow that we can add things, it gives it additional authority to say, and such other things that shouldn't be included either.
At that point, though, why do you think they did that if it's just base pay? That's what I don't get.
Lobbyists.
Yeah, unless you blame it on the lobbyists.
Yeah.
But they it seems to me, I mean, that's more of a political argument. It seems to me that when even Governor Brown, I'm sorry, comes back later on and says, that's not what we meant, or if a lobbyist comes back and says, that's not what we meant, that is convenience. That is absolutely the convenience of the conversation that's going on at that moment. We never meant that. I don't believe that for a second. It's just a matter of convenience on their part to come back later on and say, we'll give you the answer you wanted to hear, or whoever they're speaking to.
Okay, or Gabe,
Scott? I just had a question for Harvey. How, with PERS and other 1937 acts allowing it, you're giving us your legal counsel advice. Do you know if their legal counsel gave them something else? In other words, we're hearing your opinion, and it's your opinion. Mm-hmm. somehow PERS, the biggest one in the United States, and other sister agencies of ours, 1937 Act, obviously went a different direction. And that's what I'm having a struggle with right now. So.
That's a struggle.
Their legal counsel, do you know if they gave them advice?
In some instances, yes. Yeah,
their legal counsel somehow may have defined what you gave us different.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Ken Westerman. I'll try to be brief, but I just wanted to address a couple things. First, I can appreciate the intellectual arguments and debates here, and certainly I can also appreciate some of the comments from the opposing views. Really bring up some good points. What I think it means, Harvey, is that number one, or payable, and then pensionable compensation are synonymous, that you don't necessarily need special compensation. I think special compensation was a redundant inclusion in the law. The normal monthly rate of pay does include special compensation. So you don't need to even have the special compensation in there. And I believe the evidence is supported by the fact that they do specifically spell out exclusions. And then they include in there, and any other item which the board determines. So the law, although arbitrary, wouldn't need that if it didn't mean something different. So I personally see that pay rate and number one under pensionable compensation are identical, because number two, special compensation, is really redundant under that language. And second, to Deborah and John's comment on the whole rates and employee packages, I appreciate the comments. Let me you're familiar with how CalPERS calculates their rates and how CICERA calculates. We obviously do things quite a bit different. So our actual contribution rates are much higher than that of CalPERS. So when an employee looks at two competing agencies, they say, okay, I want to go to CalPERS agency, say, you know, Richmond PD or San Ramon PD, or I want to stay in Contra Costa. Not only are they going to a CalPERS agency which has a higher retirement benefit, but they're paying a much lower contribution rate for that benefit as well. Because of our actuarial policies and policies that the board has adopted over the years, although I'm in 100% agreements with, it's much higher than that of CalPERS. So not only are they going to an agency that has a much higher salary and a much greater benefit, they're paying a lower cost for the greater benefit as well. So that's really all I wanted to address with on that issue.
I'm Vince Wells, president of the Firefighters 1230. I just wanted to just address number one as well. And I'll just give you one example in the fire service for this normal rate, monthly rate of pay. I've been a firefighter paramedic, well, I'm a fire captain paramedic now, but for 18 years. For 18 years, I've received a 10% differential to provide advanced life support as a fire captain paramedic. We also have fire captains that are not paramedics, and they do not provide advanced life support. I've been doing it for 18 years, my entire career. So to eliminate that 10% differential is you're impacting my normal monthly rate of pay. I've been getting that my entire career, and that's the point I want to make, and I hope you guys consider that. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't think we're impacting your rate, it your doesn't impact yours at all, because this doesn't affect
you're a legacy
you
employee.
As a legacy.
No, I'm saying that a new employee would come on with the same situation. We have hired firefighters, and we'll have firefighters that promote that are paramedics that will promote to engineer, and once you get to the engineer and a captain rate, it's only a differential. It's not built in your base salary. So my point is, this would happen to that person, and I think that somebody that works their entire career in a position where they're compensated for their entire career is something that they should be considered when they retire.
Rusty, then.
Again, the retirement board certainly not taking away differentials from their pay. They're always going to get the differentials. We're just not going to count it towards the pension. Okay, that's important.
It's a normal monthly rate of pay.
But your differential is not part of the normal monthly rate of pay. It's something that comes later after you've worked 10 years or whatever.
Well, I would say the definition of normal monthly rate of pay, what is that? To me, it's what I get every month.
It's a job requirement to get hired.
Get this. Introduce yourself and get them. We have to record everything. Thank you.
Is it a job requirement to be a paramedic now, to be hired by the fire department?
Sometimes.
Jared Pallant, Contra Costa County Fire and Local 1230. When we recruit, we have different job classifications, and we will have tests. You have to either apply as a firefighter paramedic. You have to have all the credentials to work as a paramedic within the state, within the county, and then we also hire firefighter EMTs. So if we hire a firefighter paramedic, they get hired as a paramedic. They have a classification, firefighter paramedic. They get paid 10% for it. Once they promote, it becomes an incentive pay. It was still part of their job requirement to get hired. They're continuing to work as a paramedic. They could have worked as a firefighter paramedic for 10 years, paid 10% of their, they get paid 10% more as an incentive, or as a firefighter paramedic versus a firefighter EMT. For 10 years, they paid that 10% towards their pension. They're going to promote to engineer paramedic or captain paramedic. It's going to become a incentive pay. So for that 10 years they were paying as a firefighter paramedic, it basically all goes to the wayside. They're not going to get compensated for it. Their retirement level is going to be based off the exact same base pay prior to them promoting. So for 10 years, they were...
I'm glad you explained that, because I think these are exactly the kinds of things that you guys need to change with the employer. I mean, there needs to be a classification for that paramedic firefighter that moves all the way through their career. And they are getting that extra 10%, and it is pensionable.
As
that's part of their base pay.
Last time we spoke on this several months ago, I talked about that, and we did try to address that at the bargaining table. The county was not having it. They did not want to move on that ground. And there are certain things that are, the way I look at it, is the retirement board, just like before PEPRA, they had certain things that they did classify as compensable, what they basically took and factored into their retirement. They eliminated it. Why should the county have to negotiate to add it in? It's a retirement board decision. They're deciding what is compensable.
Yeah. It was a legislature
decision.
Yeah,
well, we didn't eliminate it. The law did. Okay, for new employees as of January 2013. Again, and you speak to an important issue I have with the CalPERS list, because when I look at all those items, a lot of them look like they're required for the job. I'm thinking, well, why would you count them as a separate special compensation if they're required for the job? Why aren't they built into the base salary in the first place? Which is an issue I have, even here in the county. I don't know why. I realize this could exponentially grow into more classifications, but I don't know if there are that many different classifications. I think with safety and fire, perhaps there's some. It's not throughout the entire county. But I think the employer should go back and reevaluate, knowing now that the retirement board is not going to budge on this. I think maybe the employers were wondering if maybe we'd take up the problem and solve it for them. But if they see that we're not, then it's back in their court, and hopefully they will negotiate with you and come up with something reasonable. Yeah. But going back to Ken's comment again about the layoffs, or not the layoffs, but the people exiting from the county, how many of those were PEPRA employees or that were hired on January 1st or after January 1st, 2013, that left because of competing agencies? Do you know, Ken, how many of those were?
At this point, it's a small number. It's a much smaller number than that. I would probably say less than 10. Okay. However, those numbers are increasing exponentially as time goes on. So, I mean, I couldn't give you an accurate figure. I'd have to talk to the Sheriff's Administration.
And I know it sounds silly to ask the question, but do you ask them why they're leaving, if it's both salary and benefits, or is it more the salary that they have an issue with?
Real quick, one comment. You guys addressed this earlier, that you said the new employees just look at basically what they're going to take home, what money they're going to have to live off day to day. I'm a younger new employee. I came from a different system in Nevada. Down here, I've worked for several different fire departments. Not once have I ever looked at that as, what am I going to make right now? I'm looking at to set myself up for my entire life, my future. How am I going to be able to provide for my family and progress with my life? I don't look at, what am I going to do this month? Most of the employees in this county, our fire department, are smart employees. They're trying to set themselves up for the future. They don't look at the day-to-day thing. We are smarter than that, and we look at the big picture. How am I going to live my entire life? So I think that's a generalized comment, and it's not necessarily true, not with today's workforce.
To give a little bit more detail for you on your question, it's a fair question. A lot of employees do just look at that base pay. You're right. And there are the numbers of PEPRA people that have left is far fewer than that total of 55 that I've given you. However, it goes back to the apples to apples comparison. When you sit down and you talk to them and they say, and you ask, why is it you're leaving? And they go, you know what, really, it's the pay. You know, we just cannot compete. My pension cost is so high, my salary is so low, cost of living in the Bay Area is so high, and I need to work an ungodly amount of overtime, you know, to support my family and, you know, start a family. When you sit down and talk to them about their total benefit package, which is the responsibility of all of the associations, when I meet with the new employees, I say, hey, this is what your pay is, and this is what your benefits are, this is what your health plan does, and this is what it covers, and this is what it doesn't cover. When I explain to them about how PEPRA works here in Contra Costa versus how PEPRA works at Alameda County or any of the other 37 acts or in PERS, and you explain it to them, the light bulb goes on in their head, and they go, So if they're leaving just for the money, the nail in the coffin is the pension, the disparity in the pension. So they go, you know what? If the pension is on an equal footing, the employee can say, well, you know what? I like working at the county or the sheriff's department. It offers me a lot of diverse opportunity. I have faith that the bargaining units of the DSA and the other groups will make some sort of consensus with the county and raise our compensation level up. That's, you know, the optimistic look that some have. Others are like, pay $2,000 a month take home at minimum and the pension's worse, I'm out. So those that are really informed are leaving for both, and those that are not informed, which is probably most of them, or they just don't understand it yet, because most usually it takes time. You know, when you start, you're happy to have a job and this, that, and the other. You're not really thinking about all the pension stuff. Only that comes later. But those that do know that, yeah, it's a no-brainer for them.
Yeah. Thanks.
I just want to... The PEPRA that Jerry, you mentioned, Jerry Holcomb, that PEPRA excludes the pensional compensation of the following. And if you look at item number 8, compensation for overtime work, that's obvious, other than as defined in Section 207, Title 29 of the United States Code, or FLSA. So that right there, if we follow the law AB 340, I feel like base pay only is in direct conflict of what AB 340 says, to include FLSA. But we don't include FLSA, and it specifically says other than as defined. So I just want to make that a mention.
I believe FLSA pay is base pay. It's just at a different rate. So that's something that we may need to look at specifically. But yeah. FLSA pay is base pay, in my view. Because it is simply a different pay rate, a higher pay rate for the mandatory normal work hours. So I don't consider FLSA pay a premium pay by any means.
Mm-hmm. So real quick, I recall specifically that at that board meeting when this was initially voted on, before I was on the board, that FLSA was brought up and this board said no, base pay only. So we need to take a look at if this vote goes the way everyone's probably thinking, that we need to make sure that FLSA is included.
When they do the overtime, do they base on the FSLA hourly rate or on another rate? I'm going to say if that is true, then the overtime rate would be based on that, because overtime is always on base pay.
The way they do it for the firefighters, is, okay, so they work an average 56-hour week.
Right.
And FLSA says, well, anything over 53 has to be a time and a half. Well, all 56 are included in base pay at straight time. And this FLSA pay item is the other half on the 3 hours.
So is it at time and a half at the 53-hour rate?
It's the half time.
Half time at the 53-hour rate or at the 56-hour rate? That would kind of contradict the whole calling it base pay.
No, it's
the base pay item includes 56 hours times their hourly rate, $40 an hour.
Okay.
The FLSA will include 3 hours at $20 an hour.
Okay. What point does it bring up to Rusty's thing? It's just that I know sometimes an employer may not want to have a new pay code because when they pay overtime, then they're paying overtime at the higher rate. So I can see that discouraging them.
Okay. Jerry?
Yeah, I have a quick question for you. So, you know, means normal monthly rate of pay or base pay on number one up there. So a person goes to work at the juvenile hall and works their entire career on swing shift, gets that 5% differential. He's paying on that in the retirement system. He's got, is he not or isn't he?
No.
Okay.
Obviously the issue is very divisive. Interpretations abound, not only among systems, but among board members here. I just want to point out some issues that Pepper has brought is going to bring into effect here. A lot of these either different shifts, graveyard swing shift, holidays, weekends, the newer people are always the ones that end up with the bad shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're at the bottom of the seniority. So you're essentially setting up a difference of within a department, within a classification, within a facility such as the jail, as to persons working the same shifts, doing the same job, but their pension benefits are going to be different. A lot of these shifts are required. I mean, it's not voluntary, especially in the jail. Overtime or a swing shift or swing shift transitioning into a graveyard or a regular day transitioning into a swing shift, it's mandatory. They don't unlock the door for the deputies to leave any more than they do the inmates when they need mandatory coverage. So that's going to result in issues. Clearly, the employer intent prior to PEPRA was to have these differentials included for pension compensation. And there were reasons that they were not previously included in base pay over the years. And it kind of got out of hand. I never really understood the reason why, but for some reason, county negotiators love to, well, we're not going to increase your base pay, but we'll give you a differential for that, or we'll give you allowance for this or an allowance for that. It truly got out of hand, but it was clearly understood by both sides that these items were going to be pensionable. The retirement board, in interpreting PEPRA, basically conducted a sea change here, in that we took the common intent of both the employer and the employees that these differentials and other pay items that were previously pensionable are not going to be pensionable anymore. Now, whether that's an interpretation of the law or personal feelings or philosophy, it's up to the individual board members. We didn't seek any input from the employers with regards to this interpretation of the law or this application of the law. We did hear input from some employee groups, fire and deputy sheriff. I'm a strong proponent that pay should all be pay. It shouldn't be classified as this, that, and the other. It should all be base pay. I would highly encourage both the employers, the county included, to change this and roll these items into base pay. So it would simplify everyone's life. Not only Sarah's bookkeeping, but employers' bookkeeping and finance, and certainly simplify negotiations. With regards to the private sector, when you're looking at a 401k limit on contributions, let's say you make right at that, or let's say you make $5,000 over the contribution limit to a 401k. In looking at how much money you can contribute to that 401k, there is a differential made between if you worked a swing shift and received pay for that, or if you, whatever other differentials there may be in the private sector. The limitation on contributions is pay, and pay is pay is pay. It's money you received.
It's a percent of pay.
It's a percentage, a certain percentage up to the limit.
Right.
But they don't look at what's composed in that. It's, did you get this money? Was that amount on your paycheck? What we're trying to do here is slice and dice. Now, the intent of the legislature, who really knows? But I will vote in favor of the substitute motion based largely on the fairness here. And I would encourage the employers and the employee units to reach some agreement going forward to put these pieces all in one pot. And so as that occurs, then our inclusion of the individual items will essentially become moot because there won't be any of these individual differentials floating around. So for that reason, I'm voting in favor of the substitute motion. But if that fails, I strongly encourage employers and employee unions to get together on this. Okay? Any other comments?
Sounds like the start of the roll call vote.
Let's do it. So on the substitute motion, is to consider a policy change to include certain differentials. Okay. Everybody may have that in mind. Let's do a raise your hand. All in favor of the substitute motion, please raise your hand.
We need to record the
34. You get all the names. Those opposed to the substitute vote, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. So, since the substitute motion failed, our current policy is base pay only. Arby, do we need to take a vote on the original motion?
No, not if you're changing it. There's nothing to vote on.
Okay.
I'll withdraw
the motion.
Okay. Why don't we take a 10-minute break? Be back in our seats by 25 to 11.